preach a sermon today. I'm going to just kind of share a testimony of my life. I'm an old guy, so this happened many, many years ago. But in 1972, I gave my heart, my life over to Jesus Christ. I read a little tract called My Heart, Christ Home, and it said that Jesus knocks at the door of your heart, and he wants to come into your life. And you don't have to clean up your house. You know, he's likening your heart to a house. When you invite someone into your house, you don't have to clean up your house before you let them in. Jesus will help you clean up that house, you know, one room at a time. And I could relate to that because I needed my life and my house cleaned up big time. And, you know, I gave my heart and my life to the Lord. I'm dropping pencils here, but that's all right. I don't need that pencil. And the Lord started making changes right away. I used to swear and cuss and use foul language. I couldn't say four or five sentences without using a swear word. And the Lord just took that away immediately. And, you know, that was the first room in the house that was changed. And then I started getting into the Word. So reading the Word, and my first thinking was, okay, I grew up in church and Sunday school. I knew a lot of the stories, having gone to Sunday school. But I thought, well, I'm going to read the Bible for myself. I never had a habit of reading the Bible. So where should I start? I thought, well, you know, being a genius, just being facetious here, I'm going to pick a short book. I'm not going to read some long book. I'm going to start with a short book, you know, a tiny step. Take a small step first. So I chose the book of James because I thought, I can read that in about 5 minutes or something like that. And so I started reading that, and it hit me right away that the passage that Jeremiah read, that when we encounter trials, tough situations, hard times, our initial reaction maybe needs to be totally different than what it used to be. Because I grew up in a family where my mom was a bit of a perfectionist, and so she could find something wrong in even a pretty decent situation. She would just kind of like focus on the one wrong thing, you know? And so that's the family I was raised in, so I learned to look at the things that were wrong. And, you know, I heard grumbling and complaining. My brother would grumble about stuff. And I'm sure I grumbled about stuff, too. And so I'm reading James, and I'm going, wait, it says, consider it pure joy when you encounter various trials. That's different than anything I've experienced. Anything I know about, everybody I know grumbles and complains about stuff. Not just my mom or my brother, but kids in school, everybody, you know, everybody. That's just a normal reaction. I'm supposed to, what, God, I'm supposed to rejoice? You got to be kidding me. But I said, no, it's the Word of God. That's what God tells me to do. Rejoice, consider it joy when you encounter various trials. Why? Knowing that the testing of your faith will produce endurance, and let endurance have its perfect work, that you may be complete, perfect and complete. This is kind of the same word in the Greek, perfect and complete in every way. And knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect work, that you can be perfect. And I was kind of relating to my mom. You know, it's like, wow, she expected me to be perfect, and I just never measured up. And I just kind of rebelled against that because I knew I could never measure up, and I never felt like I would be good enough. And so I got angry, and, you know, I'm rebelling against all that stuff. But here God's saying that I can become complete the way that He wants me to be if I'll just have enough faith to consider joy. Why? And I understand, okay, as a Christian, I need to have a life take steps of faith. And so that includes some days where there's sunshine and happiness and electricity, and it includes days where there's a foot of snow and it's cold in the church house, and you know, my feet are cold, my hands are cold. You know, am I going to complain or am I going to consider it joy? And Jesus said, consider it joy. Knowing that testing your faith produces endurance. How many of us need endurance? Yeah, we all need endurance. I was going to start out my testimony by asking you a question. How many major trials do you think people will experience in their lifetime? Do you think only one or two? Zero? 100? 10? Quite a few major trials, though. How many minor trials will we experience in our lifetime? Thousands?
Yeah.
So that's just part of life. That's how we get through life. We have to consider it joy, knowing that testing of our faith produces endurance. We need that endurance. We can't give up. And if any of you lacks wisdom, now that was the second thing. And one of the purposes of trials is it shows us that we need to know more, and we need to respond differently, and we need wisdom to find God's solution. You know, trials are good. God uses trials for our benefit. That's what I meant by trials are good. And He uses them for our benefit to make us better people. And one of the things that happens is He needs to kind of underscore in our brains that you're not as smart as you think you are, Dave. You know, you think you got the right answer. Yeah, you got a lot of A's in high school. You know, you did better on tests than a lot of other kids you went to school with. But you don't have all the answers. And you need wisdom. And you don't always have the right answer, especially when it comes to life. And you don't always make the right decision. In fact, you've made some pretty dumb decisions. And so trials underscore our need for God's wisdom, to find God's solution, to find God's answer. And that's, and then I started to understand, oh, okay, that's why I can rejoice. I can consider it joy because I need to have the humility to know that I'm not so smart and I don't know all the right answers and I make mistakes and I need God's wisdom for every situation in life. And this is one of those ways where when I become aware that I need God's wisdom, because we all know people who think they're so smart, they think they never make mistakes, they think they have the answer, they don't need to listen to anyone, they don't need to listen to God, they don't need to listen to the Bible. You know, I can just live my life, and you look at their life after a while, you go, yeah, they're making all kinds of mistakes, but they'll never admit it. But, you know, then you say, okay, God, if you lack wisdom, pray, and pray in faith, don't pray in doubting, and God will give you the wisdom you need. Right? And how many of us have experienced that? Yeah. And is there any limit to how often that works? No, it'll work forever. For every situation we face, God will give us the wisdom that we need. And a lot of times, the answer is either a little bit different or a lot different than what we thought we should do. Right? I call it counterintuitive. But it's a lot different than the first thing that comes to our mind. Oh, I ought to handle this situation by doing this or doing that. No. God has a different way of handling stuff. You know, I think about Cliff Neufeld, who plays the piano for every other Sunday. And he had a story. He was a son-in-law. His wife's mom used to be the church secretary many years ago, Barbara King. Her husband, Alan King, passed away a few years back, and he was one of our missionaries in Message of Life. Barbara King was a great church secretary, always had a great attitude. You know, she was like a duck. She would just let it roll off her back, you know, when people had a beef or a complaint or whatever. She didn't let people push her buttons. And the thing about Barbara King, though, she had cancer. And she got cancer not just once, not just twice. I think she got cancer, different kinds of cancers, 3 or 4 times. And I love how Cliff tells the story. He says, each time she got cancer, because Barbara was kind of Cliff's hero, each time she got cancer, she said, okay, God, do you have a lesson? Do you have something you want to teach me? What should I learn from this? Every single time. And Cliff said she didn't mumble and grumble and complain and feel sorry for herself. She always kept her eyes on the Lord. Okay, Lord, this is a trial. Now it's time for me to see what you want to teach me, how you want to change me, and all that. How many of you are kind of cold here? If I get enough hands, I'll do a short testimony here. Okay, I'll get some hand raised. That really is a fantastic testimony, though. So trials should lead us to understand our need for greater wisdom, to understand that maybe what I think I should do is not the right way to handle it. It should lead us to prayer, to find God's solution to the situation, to depend on God's strength. And it also, the trials are good because they help us walk closer to the Lord, rely on the Lord more. Otherwise, if we think we can handle everything, well, God, I'm glad I know you, but I'm just going to go live my life, and if I need you, I'll give you a call. No, God allows these trials to draw us nearer to him. And like I said, they produce greater wisdom, closer prayer life, greater endurance, and then we become better prepared for the future. Because when you go through a trial, when the next trial hits you, you go, hey, God got me through this last one, and that seemed horrendous, and I didn't know how I was going to make it, but God was there, God showed up, God gave me the strength. And it's not like the next trial is going to be easy, or that it's going to be something that we look forward to. You know, trials are always kind of a headache, but they don't have to lead to a heartache, because with the trial, we go, no, God is there. He'll never leave us. He'll never forsake us. I call on his name. He'll give me the strength I need. He'll give me the endurance. He'll give me the wisdom. He'll be there for me. He's going to get me through this. And it makes it easier. I kind of have a theory. We only had one child. But I kind of have a theory that after you have more than one kid, it becomes a little bit easier. It's not always easy, but it becomes a little bit easier because you know a little bit more what to expect. You know, you've been through the drill. I'm looking at the berries here. I'm getting a little bit of a nod from Julie, because you guys have 4 kids. But trials are that way. You know, we go through the drill, and we go, okay, God, I know you're going to get me through this one. You got me through the last one. You have an answer. You're going to bring it out some good. You know, I don't see any good on the horizon, but you're beyond the horizon, and there's some good that's going to come from this. And like I said before, the key word to all of this is consider it joy. Let's say feel joy. This is how to view the trial. This is your initial reaction. This is how you choose to handle the trial. Consider it all joy, even though you don't feel that way. And if you handle it right, God will see you through, and then eventually you can feel the joy. You know, you can go beyond considering a joy, and you can actually rejoice from your heart and soul. So anyway, that was one of the early key passages of scriptures that God wrote on my heart. And it's come in handy. I don't really have a life verse, but this would probably come pretty close to it. If I had a life verse, it would come pretty close to a life verse, because I had to use it so many times. And a lot of people think that being in the ministry is easy, you know, easy job. But it's funny. I've had one person who said to me, used to belong to our church, and now he's moved down to Southern California. And he was a law enforcement guy. And I can't imagine how tough that job must be. How many of you would like to be law enforcement? I don't see a whole lot of hands here. But he said to me, Dave, I can never do your job. Kind of like law enforcement is easier than being a minister. There are trials. Everybody faces trials. You know, ministers don't get off scot-free. We face them too.